modern culture at companies look at the website as a product. So just like that company has products and services that they sell, the website is an additional product in their product line, and they treat it just like a product.
Welcome to the Inbound Buzz Podcast, your weekly jolt of all things digital and inbound marketing, brought to you by redpandas.com.au. Now for your host and co-founder of Red Pandas, Moby Sadiq.
Welcome to episode 107 of Inbound Buzz. My guest today is Luke Summerfield, who is the go-to market lead for all things web at HubSpot. He's a bit of a veteran, having been at HubSpot for around 6 years, has a marketing career spanning client side, agency side. He's done it all. Welcome to the show, Luke Summerfield.
Thank you so much for having me. 107 episodes. That's a lot. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You all have been doing this for a while.
Yeah, you obviously, you're too popular, Luke. You're too famous. You don't even see who's... Who's having you on, right? It's been a little while, and it's awesome to speak to folks like yourself. But it's been a few years since I've seen you, Luke. Last time I saw you, you were presenting at Inbound at Boston, and now you've got your little sort of setup at home. So how's things with you right now?
I mean, things in general are good. Yeah, I was very out and about in the community a couple of years ago, and then for about 2 years, I dove into like a whole separate world, which is like the world of developers, people that are coding cool stuff on top of HubSpot. So I was a little bit behind the scenes working with just the developers that are coding stuff. And now, of course, the last like 6 to 8 months, I'm just talking to anyone who's interested in anything web. So and things are good. We moved out here. I actually work remotely full time for the last 2 years for HubSpot.
So you've been in San Diego before it was cool. You've been working remotely for a while now.
Yeah, which, I mean, there's pros. I mean, the one thing is, obviously, like, it's tragic, the events that cause everyone to have to do this, but I'm hoping at some level, there's a certain level of empathy that folks get for what it's like to work on a daily basis remotely, because just like anything, there's pros and cons, and until you actually can have to do it, you don't really understand some of those cons. I think sometimes folks see remote work as just all roses and brandy, but, you know, there's definitely downsides to it as well.
First, Luke, pray tell, what is a go-to market lead? Like, HubSpot has these awesome titles, and some of them, you know, like a really left field, but go-to market lead, that's an interesting one. What does that mean? What do you do?
I don't think anyone knows what the heck a go-to market lead does.
They make it generic enough so you can do everything, right? Eventually.
For real, actually, like, what the role is, if you put like the title aside, is, you know, at HubSpot, we talk about flywheels. And you have a little flywheel spinning, and the go-to-market lead is responsible for identifying, prioritizing, and squashing any friction in that flywheel anywhere in the business for the business unit they own. So, for example, for myself, the business unit is CMS Hub, and I typically will work on initiatives that will reduce friction somewhere in the flywheel for the CMS Hub. And those initiatives almost always are involving usually almost every department at HubSpot, but it's usually at least a handful. So I'm working with like some of the sales leadership teams, the service leadership teams, maybe the marketing leadership teams and the product team. All the GTMs sit on product, so we work much more closely with product as well. And just figure out solutions for how we can reduce the friction and allow the customers to be more successful and for the business to grow. The two numbers that GTMs own, we call them GTMs for short, are customer NPS for their product unit and revenue for the product unit. So that's anything that falls in those two, which is pretty much everything, could be something that that I work on.
Interesting. You know, I my very next question is on the CMS Hub, but because I thought about this, I'm like, well, obviously HubSpot, you know, when they release a product, you know, they release it right. They take a few years on development. And the last 5 years has probably been, you know, 3 or 4 key products being released, like, you know, in terms of key areas. So that's not a lot. So I thought, what does Luke do outside? Because he's not just, because when you sort of, we see you when there's a big announcement or when something comes out. So I'm like, is he just the kind of, when you think of go-to, you think something's just gone out now and you're the biggest sales rep for that particular area, but that's not the case. So it's very interesting you talk about, you work on the friction between the different hubs. And sure, not every company or organization can have someone who works interdepartmental or cross-function, but the idea of trying to reduce friction within our organizations, and usually it's marketers, right? They're often the linchpins of that particular role, I think is quite important. Like I always sort of say, you know, for a lot of our clients have HubSpot, a lot of them don't have HubSpot, but I sort of say to everyone, whether you have the products or not, just look at what they're doing. Like look at how they become the educators in the market. You know, they put out certifications, they've occupied that position, you know, in the mind of their persona. So I think that's another cue for everyone. I just didn't want to lose that point there. The fact that, you know, obviously if you can't have this type of, you know, person who reduces friction, at least understanding the power of reducing friction between departments or between roles or units or whatever. I think that's a very important one.
Yeah. I mean, there's the beauty is, again, because this role is so open-ended, it could really be anything. Basically, at the end of the day, the two questions are customers being successful and finding value in our product? And is the company growing as a part, as a afterthought of that, as because they're being successful? And any no's to those questions, any areas in the business, whether that's just internal, whether that's just external, whether that's a combination of both, is something that we need to, like, is basically my responsibility to try to solve. And so to your point, there are projects that are 100% just working with internal teams. It's a lot of operations, a lot of scalability, a lot of, internal friction that we're seeing. And so there'll be initiatives that I'll work on that. And then I'll hop off that call and I'll jump onto my next call or my next meeting. And it's a totally customer focused initiative where it's just 100% about, launch campaigns or about, certification or whatever it is. So, it's a beautiful role because it is so flexible. You have to have the right type of individual that enjoys that unstructured nature and very entrepreneurial minded type of folks that love that unstructured nature. But it's an interesting role. It's keeping me busy, that's for sure.
Yeah, nice one. So speaking of the main reason why we've got you on today is CMS Hub. So what first off, I know there's a lot of problems in the world of CMSs and plugins and a whole bunch of stuff that drives people insane. And I think we'll touch on those as we get through, but what are some of the key problems that HubSpot identified in the market that you thought, you know what, there is an issue with this, with the world, there's a problem we can solve here. What were some of those problems or gaps you guys found?
Three things that we observed in the web industry as a whole, there's three shifts, kind of fundamental shifts to the way that we think about websites and our businesses and how we help them grow. The first one is a culture shift. The culture shift was how the company thinks about the website as a tool to grow the business. There's been a shift there, and that's like a whole conversation we can get into. The second shift we saw is how a company goes about building a website. So the actual process shift are changing. And then the third one is technology, which is kind of the question that you're asking about, which is the types of technology that enable the process and culture change and enable the company to grow. The types of technology that are being used are shifting. When we look at how hyper growth, really big companies like HubSpot, Facebook, Google, Slack, all of those, how they think about their website. That's where we're starting to see all these shifts, which is just very, very early days, but it opens the door opportunity for other companies like those who are listening to start thinking about those shifts and how they at their organization may need to change. So I could go into each one of those three real briefly, and then we could talk about technology if you want. Or if like the tech is more interesting, we could just talk about the CMSs and tech directly.
No, let's talk about the shift actually, because I think the obvious ones, you know, you can Google them, you can see them on the website, you can kind of, which I want to get into for sure. But the other shift, that's quite interesting. So dive into that a little bit, and then I think we'll get into some of the other gaps or problems that HubSpot CMS solves.
Yeah, the first one is the culture shift. It's again how the company thinks about the website as a tool. And traditionally, the traditional mindset towards a website is that it's very much a business expense, that it's kind of like a necessary evil. You just have to go through, you launch this thing, maybe take a a static brochure you have and you digitize it. And so you have now a digital brochure online. And it's also very much a kind of a assumption-based system where it's like, what looks pretty? What does our CEO think? And like, that's the thing you build. And what we've seen is that these hyper-growth companies are thinking about their website very differently. Instead of framing it as a business expense, it's instead a growth investment. As you're investing more and more into the website, just like any investment, a retirement fund, a stock, you know, as you invest more, you're going to see more and more return. The flywheel will spin faster and faster. Modern culture at companies look at the website as a product. So just like that company has products and services that they sell, the website is an additional product in their product line, and they treat it just like a product. It could be a free product, right? If you're not selling anything on your website or you don't have any subscription or anything like that, but it could also be a paid product. A lot of companies now are starting to build online training academies that they're charging for, or premium tools that are built on their website. And then lastly, they're making decisions based off of data, because data is so much more accessible these days, and you're able to make a lot better decisions based off of the interactions and the actual like behavior of people versus like what looks pretty or what the CEO thinks. Mm-hmm. So those are like the shift between the culture that we're seeing. The second thing is the process.
Just off you move, because that makes sense to me conceptually. So what I'd love to ask you about in terms of that culture shift, how does that apply? Does that also apply, if it does it apply to, say, you know, small or medium business, like say someone who's selling, I don't know, cleaning machines, they sell cleaning machines. So that, I love the idea of, you know, of course I love the idea. We sell websites at Redpanda, so it's in my benefit. You know, does that apply, like seeing that product as an asset, as maybe a monetization stream? Does it apply to say a company that sells cleaning machines? And if so, how? Is it just selling training, or is it a little bit more than that?
Well, one of the things that, you know, the unfortunate global events have probably triggered is a lot more companies forcing function for a lot of these companies to make that shift very, very quickly. You need to start, like if your physical location is no longer available, or you're a manufacturing company and you can no longer go to trade shows and you can no longer do some of these more non-digital type of activities, you're basically, the pandemic has forced companies to make that shift in a faster way, where they're thinking about their website as their new storefront and as their new way to sell products. So it could be, you know, as simple as e-commerce, putting in e-commerce and payments options on the site. It could be something where they offer new business lines. For example, online academies, member subscription sites, and at the end of the day, to your question of like, is it applicable for different industries? Like every single industry, it doesn't matter if it even is an industry, that means there's some problem that industry is serving to try to solve. And anytime you have a problem, you always have multiple ways to solve that problem. One is the product. But in addition to the product, there's also education. There's also other things that complement that product. So, for example, at HubSpot, we sell software. But it's funny on how many calls I get on where people are like, oh, HubSpot, I've been on your blog, I've downloaded your stuff. Like, but what do you actually do? And it's because like there's other legs of the stool outside of the physical product that you sell that helps solve that problem. It's the education plus the product, plus the people, plus the support. And all of those different things pulled together is what like makes your solution. And so if you're selling vacuum cleaners, there's probably a million, like in addition to the physical vacuum cleaner that you're selling, there's probably a certain element of education. There's probably a certain element of support. And so there's other things that you can wrap into this product on your website, in addition to just the actual physical product you're selling.
I love it. And I love how you, roped it into the context of the world we're in today. And just to briefly touch on it, and I guess hearing that definition from you, a good example would be, you know, Marcus Sheridan of former Liverpool's fame and now Impact BND. They talk about the fact that his pool company they've now pivoted into virtual tours in a way where they previously the sales rep had to get into the house, but now they've developed all these comms, all these videos that teach clients that say, hey, take a photo of your driveway and take a photo on this side of your backyard and then this, and then send us your plans and then we'll jump on a Zoom call. So they're treating it like an asset. They always have, but okay, I understand. Yeah, so you're right. It applies for every stage. So sorry. So I stopped you there. So you spoke about that, and what were the next sort of, I guess, macro trends or philosophies or mindsets you're talking about?
Yeah, the second shift. So again, that's just like all of that is just the way that a company thinks about their website is changing.
Right.
The second thing is the process that a company goes about building a website. So some of the process is informed by that culture shift. But what we look at, if you think of traditional, like a traditional website redesign, you have a traditional process that's very, very business focused. The strategy is very business focused. It's always talking about me. Why are we better than our competitors? What's our latest sale? Like, it's very business focused. It's also very much, for anyone listening who's done a redesign, you're probably cringing a little bit because it's a huge project. It's 3, 6, 9 months long. By the end, everyone's pulling their hair out. They're just so happy the thing's out the door. It probably goes over budget, gets delivered late. And we've kind of just accepted that's what happens when you redesign a site. And then because of that is such a terrifying process. Eventually we just set it and forget it. We're like, the thing's out the door. We're going to like move on to all this other stuff. And then the website decays and becomes stale and really doesn't perform over time the way it should. It kind of just decays over time. And so what we're seeing is, again, going to the kind of stemming off those things we just talked about in culture, that's informed a new process where it's a very customer-focused strategy. We want an empathetic understanding of the world that our customers live in so that we can weave the website in as a part of that world, versus just creating this thing that talks about us and just kind of throwing it over at the customer and hopefully something sticks. It's about a launching something that looks and performs better than what you have today, but do it quickly and do it as just a starting point. No, it's not perfect, but understand it looks and performs better than what we have today. We call that a launch pad website. It's the launch of all your improvement efforts so that you can start collecting data, you can make more informed decisions, and every single month be doing those investments in the website, doing those improvements on the website, using data to inform it. And so that's kind of the shift that we've seen in the process. And at HubSpot, we looked at the culture shift, we looked at the process shift, and going back to multiple legs of the stool, one of the things we built is a methodology called growth-driven design. And this methodology essentially takes everything we talked about and educates people on that, but then also puts into the little more like detailed process. So what does that look like to build a customer focused strategy? What are the steps? How do you do it? What are our templates to build a launchpad website to do continuous improvement over time in an agile way? So we have that on our site as an academy course. It's free. Anyone can take it. But again, those are the shifts in the process that we saw. And the funny thing is, those two things aren't really new. It's new to the web industry, but it's not really new to the world. There's nothing really new. It's like, if you look hard enough, you'll find something. And if we look at those things that we talked about, the shift to thinking like a product team, making data to make decisions, customer focused strategy, building something that looks and performs better than what you have today, and then continuously improving. This is exactly the shift that happened in the software industry in the 90s. Back in the 90s, we had CDs, right? That was like the standard for delivering software, the CD. And it was like this plastic disc thing for the younger folks that aren't sure what that is. And you have to polish it and take care of it. But that was like the standard for software. And what happened was, these same three shifts we're talking about in web were happening in the software world, where companies were thinking about how software was built differently. They started building different processes for how to build software, and they started looking at the shifts in technology. Things were getting cheaper. Data was getting easier to access. Server costs was going down. And we'll get into the technology shift in web in a second. And those three kind of shifts aligned where it emerged this idea of SaaS software, software as a service, where you no longer have this Microsoft 95 and then you launch it and you sit back and start coding again. And then you have 98 2 years later, just like today we have a website, launch it, kind of decays over time, and then eventually relaunch this big website 2 years later. They switched to SaaS software, and now that's just the standard. Like, it totally made CDs obsolete. We're going to see the exact same thing. We're in the early days of the exact same thing in the website world, where you know, the thought of going through a website redesign is going to be, in the future, no longer a thing. We're going to just have a website. It's going to be an asset. We're going to continuously improve it, invest it. And we're starting to see that when you look at how, again, HubSpot, Facebook, Slack, Twitter, like you name the big companies that we all know, that's how they treat their websites. It's like a piece of software.
We'll link to that. Obviously, growth-driven design, that's something you've espoused for years. So we'll definitely link to the certifications and some links to that in the show notes. And if you're if you're listening to this, you can get the show notes at redpandas.com.au/EP107, where you can not only get the links, but also see our pretty faces, and you can see Luke's, which looks like his daughter's room that he's in right now, which is a very pretty room, Luke. It goes very well with this interview. So yeah, awesome.
I can't tell you how many times people have asked me if I'm working out of one of my kids' rooms, but this is my room. I'm just a kid. I'm like a big kid. We love Disney. So for those who are listening to podcasts, there's a ton of Disney ears from like Disney. We live in San Diego, so it's like an hour and a half away from Disneyland. So we go there all the time. And there's a bunch of Disney ears, and you know, we got all kinds of colored flags, as a little stuffed animals. So we're just huge nerds, my wife and I, and you know, we're like kids at heart. So
yeah, like, I don't know if I've offended you.
I take it as a compliment.
Yeah, yeah.
I take it as a compliment. If you're like, no, I take it as a compliment, because it's life's too short to act old. So I like acting young. We have a good time.
Exactly. That's why I wear a snapback to hide my receding hairline as well.
Normally I have one on, but not today.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, yeah, so where were we? So we spoke about that and how that shift sort of is now a good time to talk about the technology side, you think?
Yeah, so we have again, we talked about how companies are thinking about their websites differently. We have the process they're going about. Now the technology, the thing that you're building your website upon. And what we saw, and this will go to your original question, which is like, why did we launch CMS Hub? What does this thing solve? What we saw, the shifts in technologies, traditionally, if we think of like content management systems, that's the, like, for those not familiar, it's like the primary tool that you host your website on and build and grow your website on, like CMS WordPress, for short, yeah. Like a WordPress. Traditional CMSs are very much, they force you to have to spend a lot of time and energy in maintaining the system, right? So that could be plugin updates, that could be server management, the security, the site gets hacked, and now you gotta like spend hours rebooting it back up. And so the problem with those traditional systems is it basically forces you to focus an inordinate amount of time on your system, which pulls your time away from your customers. You're literally employing maybe full-time IT folks or developers that are just building the system and managing it, and makes it very difficult for you, even if you're a marketing team, to like wrangling and fighting the system. Secondly, we saw that traditional CMSs, because of that, this is kind of goes hand in hand with the high maintenance thing. As your company grows, your company demands more out of your website, right? You have to have more functionality, new sections, you know, now payment processing, all these things. And traditional CMSs, those, in order to build a website that meets that demand, again, you're adding more plugins, adding more things in. That contributes to the high maintenance, but it also contributes to a second problem, which is gatekeepers. Where you as a marketing team, you own the website, you need to do something to accomplish your goals. And anytime you need to make a change to the website, an update to the website, you have to go to your developer or your IT team. And of course, they're in some other sprint cycle with some other focus. So you gotta, you know, 6 weeks later, they come up for air and you gotta fight with them to prioritize it. And so it causes a lot of friction, going back to friction, a lot of friction in doing what you need to do to get results. And that's not to say that you know, developers aren't important. They're absolutely critically important. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But the traditional CMS forces the developer to have to be the gatekeeper for a number of reasons. The last two that we saw with traditional CMSs is that because the traditional CMS kind of lives in its own world, away from your CRM, away from your like other platforms, it causes a very much a one size fits none experience for visitors. If you're a first time visitor, you're going to get the exact same experience on a website compared to a customer, compared to a sales lead, compared to an advocate. It's the exact same out of the box, one size fits none experience. And also because the last problem that we saw is also because it lives separately, it's very, very hard to report to your CEO, to your CMO, the impact that your content and website efforts are having in growing the business. It's hard to report your ROI on your website and content efforts. And so that makes it really tough to make, one, informed decisions on where to spend your time and energy, but two, it makes it tough when your CEO is looking at the website and saying, well, why are we spending so much? How is it helping us, you know, grow our business?
You know, just so on that. Sorry, Luke, literally just on that, I think, you know, you're saying that and people are like, well, that's the way it always is. You know, you always have the website disconnected from the ROI of content or whatever, but it doesn't have to be. And sorry if I'm segueing this, but the idea of single customer view, like I know with our clients, like it's nirvana. The idea of single customer view. So I don't know if it's worth diving into that area now or some of the other gaps, because there's so many different areas we could pivot. But yeah, spot on. It doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to have your website technology and your marketing technology disconnected and, you know, connected via a patchwork of plugins and whatever. So I think that's
Excel spreadsheet exports and mashing it up in Excel and trying to import it into the other system and getting a bunch of errors. And it's kind of crazy that we live in a day and age where that's still a thing. Like I remember before I worked at HubSpot 6 years ago, 7 years ago, we were doing that and people are still doing it today with their website. We've learned in a lot of other places, other systems, how to connect these things properly. But for some reason, the website still lives as this like in its own little land with a little duct tape and glue to try and keep it connected to everything else. What I can say is like if we step back and look at each one of those problems and maybe first just look at like what a modern SaaS or what a modern CMS, what you should look for. Now, this is not HubSpot. It could be anything. Like if you're going to evaluate CMSs, these are the things you should look for. One, going back to that high maintenance, always doing plugin updates, all that. Modern CMSs should be just like every other piece of software on this planet. It should be a SaaS CMS where all of that stuff, the server maintenance, the updates, just have it taken care of for you. SaaS CMS means like, look, we're going to just take care of all of the headaches, the stuff you hate doing, but is necessary so that it frees your time up to focus on your customers, not on the systems. It also, modern CMSs also empower the marketing team to get their work done. And so this is where you have a different relationship between developer and marketer, where the developer sets the system up to enable the team to get their work done, right? They set the guardrails. Here's what is and isn't editable. Here's the flexibility you have. Because I think there's this myth that unlimited flexibility is good. A lot of times unlimited flexibility causes a lot of things to break, even if you sometimes know what you're doing. And so the developer can configure and build a system that enables the marketer to just get their work done, change colors, update buttons, add in new rows, columns, new modules, whatever they need to do, so that the developer now is not getting sucked into those little day-to-day things. They instead can build more impactful, more engaging solutions, you know, pricing calculators and quoting tools and member login systems, these like more impactful things, and just let the marketing team get their work done. On the disconnected system thing, going back to that, again, there's like the two problems we saw related to that was being able to offer a personalized experience on the site. And so when you have something like a connected system with your CMS and your CRM, your customer relation management system, directly connected, And then you add in things like your marketing tools, your social, your email. You get, again, this very in-depth view for each individual customer or prospect or audience member. All the emails they've opened, what have they clicked on in social, what have they interacted on your website, what conversations have they had with the sales team. And so all of this really, really rich data becomes right at your fingertips. Versus, oh, I have it sitting over in this system and I got to export this thing over here and mash it up. Oh, and these things don't align. So half the data I imported actually isn't very helpful. And, and when you have it all connected, you can actually do very personalized, experiences. And then the last one is that we were talking about is being able to, because it's all connected, being able to tie it back to the actual dollars, the contacts, the dollars that you're producing for the company, and doing attribution reporting back to the work that your team does and how the downstream effects impact increase in revenue, cross-sell, upsell, retention, MPS, like those types of things, to make that story to your CMO or boss of like exactly what your efforts are.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think it's one of those things. And again, like obviously, you're in this world all the time, you know, Red Pandas, you know, we're obviously in this world all the time as well. But it's not common. It's not common knowledge that those things don't have to be disconnected. You don't have to have, like you say, like you get all your contacts that come in on a form, you know, if the team remembers to export them and then import them into MailChimp, even if you have a native integration and the MailChimp forms, It's still another system. You lose something. Like lose something importing into another system, or even, you know, using like a Hootsuite to send out your social media. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's a very, very common, but it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all in one system and you don't lose that thing every time. Because the thing is, when it moves from one system to another system, you lose that attribution, right, Luke? Like, you know, if the form is built in HubSpot and the form is on, and I know this is very basic for you and I, like the form is in HubSpot, the form's on the website, then, you know, that person comes through that way, or they come through from your live chat. The live chat isn't another system. It's not a, you know, like for example, Drifty is awesome. It's amazing. There's a whole intercom's awesome. There's a whole bunch of them, but it's another system. So you lose some form of attribution, which is usually the biggest thing why ROI is very difficult to calculate. When you have these systems, you know, and that's if you have them connected. So the idea of having, exactly.
It's like a game of telephone, right? So, you know, in the game of telephone, every time you have a link, every time you get a connection, you lose a little bit of something. And of course, like you were saying, you know, you make a good point. You can connect some of this stuff with the APIs, if the APIs are available in public, or with integration, out of the box integration type stuff, or like, you know, at HubSpot, we have an app marketplace with 350 apps that allow some level of connectivity between these systems. So there's ways to do it, but that's kind of like strings between the telephone. And sometimes the string isn't passing the right information. Sometimes the string gets cut by accident and your API that your developer custom built all of a sudden isn't working properly and you got to go back and fix that. So not only is it just add layers of additional complexity and points of failure as you start stringing all these systems together. But it's more time to have to go into one system and, you know, log in, manage it, review it. And then that's one more set of logins, one more UI that you have to remember where things are at and how it works. And then you go into your next system. So it just adds layers of complexity that slow things down and reduce that. Again, going back to the flywheel, adds more friction into the flywheel, makes it harder to do some of this stuff.
I want to talk to you now quickly about trade-offs, right? So obviously, you know, one thing that you guys put out a lot of communication out there, and there's a great resource too, actually. It's called inspire.hubspot. Is that what it is, Luke?
Inspire.hubspot.com.
Which again, we'll link in the show notes, but you know, of course there's a great resource around, you know, a lot of the problems that you spoke about and HubSpot specifically, the CMS hub, a lot of the problems it solves and how it can help marketers. And one of the things you guys talk about is the trade-off. So there's always like a cost versus functionality trade-off. There's, you can get something really cheap like a Wix or a Weebly and, you know, it's a very, very low cost, but then you have these functionality trade-offs. So how does HubSpot face this?
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up, because that is one of the things that I think we, you know, in addition to what we already talked about with technology, the trade-offs is something that we tried to be very conscious of. If you look at the market of CMSs, you know, you have a lot of wonderful tools, but you have a lot of tools that force you to make those trade-offs. For example, like you said, on the very bottom end of the market in terms of just size, like the types of companies that use it, you have the kind of do-it-yourselfer website builders, things like Wix, Squarespace. I know MailChimp now has one. And these are very great tools for like simple websites, very small companies, solopreneurs, hobbyists who just need to build something and don't have no marketing or tech background. Like, I just need to build something quick. They do a phenomenal job of that stuff. The trade-off with that is that you lose the ability to customize certain things. You lose the ability to integrate it with all your systems, like we're talking about. You lose the ability to be able for it to grow with your business. A lot of folks that you talk to will eventually outgrow some of those platforms. They're, again, website demands more of them. And so eventually they outgrow some of those systems and they end up having to transition to others. So again, trade-offs. You trade ease of use for flexibility and power. If you go to the other end of the spectrum, you get the kind of Fortune 500, very high enterprise type companies where you have Adobe Experience Manager, you have Sitecore, EpiServer, Contentful, that are focused on those monster huge companies. They're in the opposite problem where those are extremely powerful systems and you can do phenomenal stuff on there. But the capital investment and the time investment to build those systems out is just like massive. And at the same time, when you actually get them all built out, they're so big that they're very, very bulky, clunky, and hard for like the average person like ourselves to use. And so you lose the trade-off there is the flexibility for marketers and the being easy to use for marketers. Then you have kind of a middle ground, right? So you have like the WordPress, Joomla, Drupal, open source CMSs. Those, your trade-off is it can be cheap. If you're a professional business, you probably want to make sure that you're not buying the cheapest $30 a month hosting plan. You might run into some of those hacking scenarios we talked about. But for a professional business, you know, if you buy something like WP Engine, we have a great relationship with WP Engine and integration with them. And we work with them quite a bit for our customers that are on WordPress. You know, there you have the trade-off of, well, it's maybe a little bit cheaper to do. You have a lot more flexibility, but even in those, now the trade-off is you're spending a lot of time managing the systems, whether it's Drupal, Joomla. I mean, anyone who's used one of these, you probably have experienced the gatekeeper problem we talked about. You probably experienced the maintenance, a high level of maintenance and security problems. And so you kind of have that trade-off. Where we are defying gravity at HubSpot is building something that pulls all the power down that you see in those large enterprise CMSs to give the ability to build these powerful web app experiences and powerful experiences on your website, personalization, all those things that are kind of historically has been reserved to those higher end CMSs, and at the same time pulled up all the ease of use that you see in the website builder type of system, and done it on a SaaS platform where it eliminates all of those headaches of maintenance and updates and things like that. So we're trying to pull those three parts of those worlds into one so that you don't have to make those trade-offs and say, if I need something powerful, it has to be hard for our team to use. Or if I need something easy to use, it's not going to be very scalable or powerful. That's what we are doing with HubSpot CMS Hub.
Thanks for listening to Inbound Buzz. Learn anything? Return the favor by spreading the word. Want to make your mark in digital? Need help with your digital strategy, inbound, and marketing automation efforts? Then visit redpandas.com.au and be sure to tune in next time for another Inbound Buzz hit.